You just blew that asshole out of the devil that was going to introduce me. Go sit down.
Oh, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Keith. Oh, I love it. I love it. That guy got all dressed up to introduce me. Will you stand up so I can introduce you? Come on. Come on. I'd like to introduce somebody to you. We ought not be organized. And I hate them flowery introductions. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Keith. Most important thing I can tell you, huh?
You weren't going to get
it. Oh, okay. Are we going to have audience participation too? Just let me get started and then I'll bring you in. Don't worry. I have not taken a drink of alcohol, nor have I used any kind of narcotic since May 11, 1976. And for that, I'm especially grateful. I have a home group. I have a sponsor. I'm over 32 years sober, and I haven't had any sabbaticals or any time off for good behavior. No vacations. I want to thank the committee for inviting Sue and I. And she's the best part of me. And Monday we will be married 46 years. And, and we courted for a few years. In other words, we shacked up for a while. So we've been together for pretty near 50 years. And if you think the steps are tough, try the marriage vows. So, you know, that ain't always been because I loved her. It's because that she believes in homicide, not divorce. So she said I haven't always been what she wanted, but I was always what she needed. So we fit. The rocks in her head fit the holes in mine. So we're buds. I feel at home in Amarillo. I want to thank everybody for being here, getting up early this morning, and coming out, and I feel at home. I was born in Perryton, Texas, Prairie Dog Town, and I was reared in the panhandle of Texas, Oklahoma, up in no man's land, and my daddy was a lawyer up in Beaver County, Oklahoma. He came down here, and he worked for Boone Pickens a number of times years ago, and my daddy practiced law in Beaver County, Oklahoma for 60 years. And the governor came out and gave him a plaque for practicing law for 60 years. He was a drunk. My daddy was a drunk. He died 89 years old and 27 years sober. I had a little bit of seniority on him. I never let him forget it. I never resented the fact my daddy was a lawyer because I always needed one. I got friends here that I know people mean very much to me and very important to my sobriety. Bob Smith from Lubbock has been in my corner for a long time, and I need that. And about 3 years ago, Sue and I bought a house in Las Vegas, and we go over there. We really love being in Las Vegas. It's a spiritual vortex in Las Vegas, I guarantee you. And I started going to meetings over there. I love the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous in Las Vegas, and we go over there once a month and hang around. I met Billy Smith, and Billy and I go to a lot of meetings together and know a lot of the same people. And I'm fortunate because I've had some winners in my corner. And, I grew up out in the Texas-Oklahoma Panhandle, and I hunted and fished all my life and tracked and that's the way I didn't want to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I tracked them down, and I'm grateful for that. I can see so far because I've stood on the shoulders of giants, and I'm extremely grateful that I am an alcoholic. Everybody knows me is glad I'm an alcoholic. Because they didn't know what was wrong with me, and neither did I. And I believe I was born an alcoholic. I'm at least a fifth generation alcoholic. And I don't brag about that. It's handy if you're going to be an alcoholic. Well, it's handy to grow up in an alcoholic home. There's alcohol there. And I took my first drink very young, and it did for me what it's supposed to do. I was 7 years old, and my grandpappy and his partner, a guy named Slicker Jim, they were buying oil royalties from the farmers, and they'd get a jug of corn whiskey, and on Saturday morning they'd take off and they'd go out and buy mineral rights from the farmers, get them drunk, press hard, six copies, and they'd buy mineral rights, and not necessarily for themselves, but for other people. But it was the excuse to get drunk. And my grandma sent me with my grandpappy, I was 7 years old, Saturday morning, out there in the panhandle. Perryton, Texas, headed north, and they had this old jug corn whiskey, because it's county option, and so they had moonshine, corn whiskey, and they had an old brown jug. They took the cork out. And I was sitting in the front seat of a 1934 Ford coupe. And Slicker was driving, and my pappy was, grandpappy was sitting in a shotgun. And it was cold. There's a north wind, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 mile an hour north wind blowing right down the chute. And we pulled off one of them dirt roads onto a farm to market road. And I'm sitting there, and they'd been drinking that corn whiskey. And I'm sure I probably drank before, because I'd stick my tongue in that the neck of that jug of corn whiskey so I didn't spill it. But my grandpappy made a near-fatal mistake. He opened the door. The door was ajar, and he opened the door on that 34 Ford coupe, and it's a suicide door. And you don't do that but once. And that dude was gone. Wham! He was gone, and the door slammed shut, and Slicker was 4 miles down the road before they know. And I'm, hey, we lost something. And he turns it around, and they go back, and my grandpappy had a 5X Stetson hat on. He had a suit on, Western suit, and overcoat and boots, cowboy boots. And he slid out of that car into that bar ditch. That's what they call them, bar ditch. And it was cuckleburrs and weeds in there, and he was skinned up from asshole to appetite. I'm telling you, he was skinned up, and he was drunk, and he was falling down. He wasn't hurt. He just skinned up. He landed on his hands and rolled around. And I'm standing there holding that jug of corn whiskey, and people going to town, and they stop. I see all the kids, and I'm standing there. Farm kids, they come to town Saturday. And there's the old man drunk, falling around in there, and he's skinned up, and I'm scared to death. I know Grandma's going to give me a licking when I get home with this mess. And somebody said, give the old man a drink, and they took that jug of corn whiskey, and the old man took a drink, and then Slicker took a drink, and they said, give the kid a drink. And I took a drink, and they poured a little of that on the old man's hands and hit him upside the head with that stuff. Take a drink, and Slicker took a drink, and I took a drink. Pretty soon, I didn't give a damn who was standing there. I didn't care if he's dead. I didn't care who saw me. I never moved a lick other than just my hand. It did exactly for me what it's supposed to do. Now, I didn't stay drunk from the time I was 7 years old till I got here, but I tried to. I tried to recapture that moment. And we didn't have a whole lot of foo-foo drinks. What we drank was called Purple Passion. Take a 5-gallon pickle crock. You pour it about half full of moonshine or white lightning, whatever you can get. It don't come with a seal on it. And it looks like white gasoline, got things floating in it. Put a big old jug of Morgan David wine in on that. Little Welch's grape juice. And if you really, really want to have a good time, put a quarter of Everclear in there. If somebody's gone into Kansas and comes back with a quarter of Everclear, I'll tell you, that'll straighten your hair. You drink 3 cups of that. You had to drink it in a tin cup. Had tin label and tin cup. And you drink 3 cups of that, and it released all your inhibitions. Old boy stepped out of the apartment, fell all the way down the stairs, all the way to the bottom, got up and brushed himself off and walked across the street. He'd been restoring a piano for his wife. He took a sledgehammer and beat that piano plumb into the ground. Had some resentments. Took them all away, baby, let me tell you. But the next time I seen that guy, he's coming down the street, I'm going down the street, he went plumb across over the other side and walked down. He didn't want to have nothing to do with me. And I drank for the effect. And I was born up in there. I could drive when I was 12 years old, got a farm permit. I was country, man. You can pour gravy on my ass and call me a biscuit. I was born up there where men are men and the sheep run scared. And we drink that white lightning and spot the hammers. Anybody know what spotting the hammer? Let me tell you, you got to get drunk enough to stand there and let your best friend hit you. And if you can get up, you can hit him. I don't know why, but I kept losing the toss all the time. I tell you what, that makes you tough. You just kind of work into it. Just makes you tough. And when I was 12 years old, I was driving, had to sit on a pillow, and I was backing down an alley. We was going up to the Oklahoma line because you'd get 3-2 beer up there, and we'd give an old boy some money, and he was going to get us a case of 3-2 beer. And I was backing down the alley, had to sit on a pillow, and another kid run out behind the car, and I run over him. His mom was standing on the porch, and she seen me. There was three other boys in the car with me, an old Chevy car. And I looked out, and that boy was laying out there on the ground flopping around. And his mom was yelling at me, and I know that she's having an affair with the sheriff. She's married to some other guy, but he's born, so she's having an affair with the sheriff. They do that. We used to get our sheriffs over in Perryton from the jail over here in Amarillo. Yeah. And I throw that old car, and I don't remember what them three other boys said, but I'll tell you this much. I throw that old car in first gear, bam, I went down the road. I hadn't even had a drink, but that guy had that case of beer up there at the Oklahoma line, 6 miles. And I needed to be there. I don't remember what them other three guys said, but they're all dead because of alcoholism. And we went up there and got that case of beer, and we started drinking that beer, riding around Friday afternoon, throwing them beer cans out. And the cops came and made the big bust, took me downtown, 12 and a half years old. And that sheriff was down there, and he come down on me, and I broke both them boys, that boy's, both of his legs driving off. Now, the amazing thing, I look back on it, is I hadn't even had a drink. And I know I had a couple of three beers, 3-2 beer, okay? Coors, Colorado Kool-Aid. And the sheriff and the lawyer and the judge and everybody got me 12 and a half years old sitting in that chair down to jailhouse. And they want to know why I left the scene of the accident. I had no words to tell them, other than I needed a beer, and that wasn't going to preach. So they made a deal, and they sent me to a little junior penitentiary over in Oklahoma. My daddy come down there, got me a deal, and they locked me up. I was about 13. They locked me up with a bunch of other little boys like me, and I learned a lot of things, being locked up with a bunch of boys. I learned don't make no difference if you're pitching or catching, you're still playing ball. You'll get it in a minute. I learned a lot of things to survive. I'll tell you what, I learned a lot of things to survive. I'm a survivor. I'm well into my 69th year of life. And I'm a survivor. I'm a survivor. I have survived life, drinking, drugging, and AA. I've even survived AA. And I learned a lot of good things. And as I You know, I functioned very well during that period of time. I went to equivalent to high school, locked up in there, and it was a very rigorous discipline. If you didn't do what they told you to do, they punished your ass. I'm telling you, they had a paddle, and it tapered from half inch down to about an eighth or quarter of an inch, had holes drilled in it, and they pried sticking your underwear to your butt. And we learned how many licks we could take without crying. And I learned a lot of good things there. I got out of there, and I went back up to Perryton, Texas. I met a little gal, cute little gal, sweet, innocent. And her daddy was a doctor and had a lot of money. And I courted her, and I sweet-talked her. And we went down to Galveston, Texas, where her daddy had a big house. We had a wedding down in Galveston, Texas. And I took her on a wild ride. I went up to Fort Worth, Dallas. Got a little trouble up there in Fort Worth and Dallas. And I had this car. I don't know where it come from. I was driving it. I borrowed it, I thought, from a friend. But it had some burlap bags in the trunk. This is 1959. It had burlap bags in the trunk, and it had some outside issues in them. I'm glad it didn't have a dead body in there. But I got in a little, I was in a nightclub down in Fort Worth, Texas, got a little altercation with some of the locals, and because by that time my drinking, you know, there ain't nothing cute or funny about my drinking. I'm going to tell you something. I just got meaner. I got meaner the more I drank. And I'm a violent drunk. I ain't talking about a little temper tantrum. I'm talking about hitting you. I'm talking about waiting outside of the two before till you come out of the bar to hit you. See? And I got in a little altercation. Ended up in jail. My daddy come down there. He couldn't get me out. My father-in-law come to see me. He said, I've got a lot of money, and I said, I know that. He said, the reason I got a lot of money is because I don't make bad investments, and you're a bad investment. As a result of that, I ended up going to penitentiary for 3 to 5, did 18 months, something like that, down in Huntsville. I learned a lot of things down in Huntsville, yeah, and it wasn't just rodeoing. And I'll be your rodeo. And I got out of there, they gave me $100 and a suit. And I made a phone call, and I called my two very best friends up there in the panhandle, Oily and Goose. Now, Oily and Goose, they didn't get them names because somebody just thought them up. Oily was Oily. He worked in the oil field. And Goose had a knife that was the fastest knife I ever seen in my life. His knife was so fast. God told me, he said, Goose is so fast with that knife. And I had a shirt on and buttons. I said, he ain't fast. He said, Goose is fast. Goose had that knife out and cut all my buttons off. And a knife back in his pocket before I could blink. I said, Goose is fast. I will never ask again. So I called Oily and Goose. They met me over at the train station here in Amarillo. They had a jug, a couple of jugs of White Lightning, a jar full of bennies. They'd been sitting out there in an old pickup truck with a shotgun and rifle in the back window. And I listened to Wolfman Jack in Del Rio, Texas. I'm getting down now, ain't I? Call me butter, I'm on a roll. I come off that train, I had me a drink of that White Lightning, took a handful of bennies, swallowed them, chased them with that White Lightning, knocked me back up against the wall, fell to my knees, and jumped up and said, damn, that's the best stuff I ever had in my life. Anticipation. We went down to Wolf Creek. Down to Wolf Creek to the dance. And I walked in there, fresh out of the joint, and I wanted them old boys to know I was home. We used to drink bourbon and Coke. Remember them old heavy Coke bottles? You ever got hit by one of them Coke bottles, you remember it. And I took one of them Coke bottles, rolled her down, bumped the dance floor, and I said, let the meanest sucker in the house bring that back. I'm home. And it looked like a stampede coming my direction. Them old hairy leg boys come off that wall. Now, I may be sick, but I ain't stupid. And the first guy coming, I hit him as hard as I could, and then I ducked into the woman's restroom. I'm a winner. And there was a lady standing there next to the door, and I said, tell me when the fight's over. So I run in the woman's restroom, hid in the stall, wait. Pretty soon she come in. She said, you can come out now, cowboy. And I went outside, and she's standing there, and the band started playing. She was handy. I'm a quick study. I said, where you been all my life, baby? I've been looking for you. She said, where you been? I said, I just got out of the penitentiary. She said, I just got back from San Antonio. I've been down to unwed mother's home. I said, hell, let's go together and give two people a break. And that was Susie 50 years ago, baby. Damn right. I found out she finished that fight I started, too. Woo! She's a keeper. You betcha. She had a car, driver's license, money in the bank, a job, place to stay. I said, stick with me, baby, and I'll take you places you've never been before. And I did. You betcha. I got to tell this story. I can't explain my relationship with her any different, but her love for me, I can't explain. These two ladies went to the zoo, and they're walking around the zoo. And one said, I'd like to go see the gorilla. And her friend said, nah, you don't want to do that. See, yeah. So they go over to the gorilla cage, and this lady sticks her hand in there, petting this gorilla, and he grabs her, and he jerks her through the bars, takes her to the back of the cage there, and mauls her and molests her. And her friend run down, got the zookeeper. They come back, and they get a tranquilizer gun, shoot the gorilla, falls on top of her. They bring the ambulance over there, get her, and take her to the hospital. A couple of days go by, and her friend thinks, maybe I better go see how she's doing up there at that hospital. And she goes up there. There she is, laying there in traction, all beat up. And her friend runs up to her and says, how you doing? She said, you just don't know. He ain't called. He ain't send no flowers or nothing. That's my baby right there. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I took her on a ride, and I got in a lot of trouble. I got in a lot of trouble. When I drank, I got in a lot of trouble. And I did different things. My folks were good people. They always they believed in education. They tried to send me to school. I went to school for 21 years. Well, it's easier than working. I may be sick, but I ain't stupid, you know. From the time I started the first grade till I quit going to school, my folks would give me money to go to school so they didn't have to put up with me. And so we dodged around. She got pregnant, said I was the father. I don't remember that. I must have been crossing over the invisible line when that happened. But you know, I'll do the right thing. I told her, I said, why don't you push your car around the block? If you don't miscarriage, I'll marry you. And she's tough. And so we got married, and she had a little girl. She had a little girl, and we got married. And man, I'll tell you what, I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea what it's like to be a husband or a father, responsible. I was sober a long time in AA before I heard somebody said, responsibility is the ability to respond. Damn, that's new. But I'm a shaker and a baker and a candlestick maker, man. I make things happen. There's people wait for things to happen. People watch things happen. Then there's dudes like me. I make shit happen. No matter where I go, I make things happen. And I made her happen. I'd get up in the morning, be snowing up there in the panhandle. I'd take off for Dallas-Fort Worth. And the sun was shining when I pulled into town. And I knew right where the action was. And I started making it happen. And here I got this lady. I was drunk in a whorehouse when that little girl was born. And my best friend told Sue when we went to pick up her and the baby. That's the kind of people I hung with. I hung with guys that said, if you get in jail, we'll get you out. If we can't get you out of hell, we'll get in there with you. But they couldn't keep a secret. No. I wrecked her 55 Chevy, and she never let me forget it. And I was down there talking to the girls about why they were taking on that profession when that baby was born, and she never let me forget it. And that's just the way it was. You're gonna hang with me, it's the way it is. That's the way it is. And of course, I told her she didn't have any choices. Long in the 60s, the heat got on, and I knew what to do, and I loaded up my family, and I went to California. I always worked in the oil fields. I liked working in the oil fields, because every rig had a pusher. All of them had dope, buckets of dope, and the joints were 20 foot long. I loved that stuff, man, and I'd get out there in the oily, and I'd be right with them. And I went to California, and I went to work offshore, and started working in the oil field. And I'd be gone. I'd go off down Louisiana, Peru. Never knew when I was coming. I'll tell you, though, one good thing about it, when I come home, you always knew it because I brought a lot of people with me. You know, I brought the guys with me, didn't want to go home and fight with their wife, so they'd come over and watch me fight with mine. Sue took up carrying this butcher knife all the time. It wasn't sharp, but she carried this butcher knife, and I'd go up the door and have three or four old boys with me, and she'd be waving that knife around, yelling at me. And them guys that back there behind me would say, get her, get her, get her. I said, step to the head of the line, Ace. This woman's got a knife up here. I passed out on her one time 15 minutes into a two-hour conversation. They don't like that. I had an old T-shirt on. She stabbed me all over my back when I come to. I said, what? What's happened to me? She said, let me see. Said, you've been drinking that rock gum whiskey and you broke out of acne of the back. Said, let me see, jerked my shirt off and poured rubbing alcohol on me. Woo! That'll get you right with Jesus. One time I got hit in the jaw and my jaw was all broke. I asked her, I was hung over. I asked her, I said, can you see something wrong with me? She looked at me and said, you know, they can't not have an answer. She said, you have polio of the teeth. Oh my God, get me a straw. We moved to California and I got a drunken uncle. We left Oklahoma City. I went down there to see a friend of mine get a prescription filled in a baggie. And we took off. We had an old station wagon with a trailer and a dog and a cat. Had the kid in the back seats laid down. Had this German Shepherd dog, crazy. I mean, my pet suffered with me. And dog's crazy. The cat's crazy there in the back seat. I'm eating these animal tranquilizers and drinking Coors beer. And it took me almost a month to get to Arizona where the petrified forest was. And I was hung up out there in the forest for two or three days, lost, looking at dead wood. Finally got in over there. I knocked the mirror off the right side of the station wagon and had that trailer on the back. Sue's job was to hang out over there and see if there's any cars coming. I got arrested when I went across the California line. The old CHP said, we don't have human rearview mirrors here in California, boy. I know you're from Oklahoma and you improvise, but you need to get that fixed. My drunken uncle got me a deal on a house and nobody lived in it. Had a couple of yards of gravel poured in the front yard and, you know, some things. Got a deal on it. The guy said, tell you what, I'll rent it to you. And if you can make your rent $75 a month, you can buy it. So I said, well, hell, I'll just buy it right now. Here's $75. And I moved in. This was the 60s. I went to California straight through. The Lion Shorty told me I could get a job on a ranch 40 miles west of Long Beach, and I didn't know that was ocean. A guy named Lion Shorty wouldn't lie to you, would he? And a bunch of hippies living next door to me. Flower people. I never seen nothing like that down in Texas. I've been down Fort Worth with the banditos being bandito bad. And I get out there and I got some motorcycle clunk over here next door to me on one side and the hippies on the other. They're dropping acid, taking their clothes off, laying naked in the front yard, watching the sun come up and go down. I had no friends. I went over there and met them. There was a guy named Doc and another guy named Professor. They shined some light on my dark spots. I got a wife and a little girl. I had absolutely no concern for them. No concern for them. Started running around them guys on one side and hanging around them guys on the other. Had a new territory. And I'm getting in trouble. And wherever I go, I take me. And there I am. I was arrested 57 times for assault and battery and resisting arrest in a 10-block area of my house. That's before the cops shoot you. That's how long ago that was, in the 60s. And I ended up in front of a judge. I'd been somewhere, probably the stock car races. And I got in a fight with some guy at the Crescent Wrench. And I was doing good till he hit me upside the head with his Crescent Wrench. And they took me to the hospital and sewed my ear back on. Had long hair, long beard, had a pair of Levi's, no underwear, no socks, no shoes, had a wife beater t-shirt on, no identification. I was traveling pretty light, really. I got this blood-soaked earmuff on, this big old thing, and it's blood-soaked. I've been in a jail ward all night, bleeding. They take me into court, shackled up with the rest of the lightweights. And the judge seen this deal, and he said, "Where is your wife?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "Put him at the back of the line. I want to wait and see if his wife, I want to look at his wife." And I was sitting out there, and some guy from A&A came along. I didn't know what A&A was. I'd been doing B&B myself. I don't know nothing about this stuff. And this guy come along, handed me a little pamphlet or something. Stuck it in my pocket. I was handcuffed. Shackle sitting on a bench, and this guy stuck this thing in my pocket, and I thought he's some kind of religious guy. But you know, hey, I'll take anything when I'm in that. You never know when I'm going to need to use it. See, ye that culleth does not deserve. And I put it in my pocket, and I got up in front of that judge, and she wasn't there. And he sentenced me to 3 to 5 years, and he'd uncuff me, and I pulled that little thing out of my pocket, some AA thing. And I said, his name was Phil Petty. He was a AA member, judge, Phil Petty. And he said, "You want to go to AA?" I said, "I'll tell you what, I owe people money in jail. I do not want to go to jail. I'll try this thing. I don't know what it is." So he had Ivan Miller come and get me. Oh, Ivan Miller. He run a machine shop, and he must have unhooked them big old chucks and stuff and then stood over, and they dropped because his arms went plumb to the ground. His hands were all oily and greasy. He's oily, face all down. Sober 26 years. Had an old pickup truck with junk in the back rolling around, and he come over, and the judge said, "This is Ivan Miller. He's going to take you to AA. You know, if you want what I got." I got this blood-soaked earmuff on. My pants are stuck to me. I just got the cuffs off, and I get in this old truck with Ivan, and he takes me and shows me where there's an AA meeting, takes me home, puts me on the couch, and he takes off. Pretty soon, Sue come home. She'd been to see a new lawyer, and the new lawyer told her I might be an alcoholic. So she had something new, and she said, she come in there and she said, "I think you're an alcoholic." I'm laying on the couch and I said, "I knew it'd come to that." As a matter of fact, I found out about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm going tonight. So I laid there on the couch. I couldn't get up. I stuck to it. So about 8 o'clock, she come over there, had this butcher knife. She said, "Get up. We're going to AA." "I don't think I want to." She got that butcher knife and jabbed me a couple times. "I think you do. You get up." Now, I had some reference points, baby. I got up off the couch, and we went out. Now, let me give you this picture. My house was painted 4 different colors because I lost interest easy. You know, got a deal on paint. It wasn't, you know, real grotesque, but it was. And I had a Corvair on one side and an Etzel on the other. Antiques. And the weeds had grown up through the car so you could hide stuff good out there. My dog had chewed everywhere his mouth could reach, he'd chewed his hair off. He looked like a laughing hyena. His gums were stuck up, had permanent dry mouth, he snarled. My cat had a permanent puffed tail. My kid looked like a wounded animal. She had an old coat on, it had Easter eggs in it, she'd set in them. Sue wore them beehive hairdos with a can and a half of spray net in it. Big old dudes. I lit a cigar next to her one time and she went, poo! Caught fire. Had to throw a coat over. Family wagon was a baby poop brown Pinto. Had no reverse. No reverse. Had to drive up through the hippie's yard. Be sure you don't run over nobody. Park it out there. Had a hole in the muffler. Went down the road crooked. Wheelied my motorcycle up the driveway and stuck it in the front of the house, so I just left it there. And we go out and get in the Pinto, got the kid and the dog and the cat, me in the back, headed for my first AA meeting. We pulled up in front of a church, had an AA meeting, had a big AA sign out there. There was Al-Anon in meeting in the room next door, but there wasn't nothing wrong with her yet. And I looked in, much like today, and people were dressed up and they was nice in there. And I remember thinking, well, if my friends see me going in there, they'll never have nothing to do with me again. That's called low bottom snobbery, baby. I don't give a damn where you come. That's low bottom snobbery. She sensed my approach avoidance and she stuck that knife in me and said, "Get in that meeting, I'll be right out here." And I went to that meeting. Nobody asked me if I had a sponsor. She's out in the Pinto. They asked me if I needed a book or a ride home. She's out in the Pinto. And they'd haul me over there every Monday for about 4 weeks. Beat the deal at the courthouse. Laid in the house. Went over there every Monday, sat in there. Count the squares in the ceiling. I knew who the ones that had the wisdom. They're the ones that got the hair growing out of their ears. I seen that, yeah, I know. Don't ask them nothing. I wouldn't have drank with nobody in that room, much less sell them dope, you know. 4 weeks or so went by, I beat the deal down to the courthouse. She let me drive, I went over there and drove by that A&A meeting, pulled up out there, some old fool come over and said, "You coming in?" I said, "No, I'll come over here and tell you I'm leaving. I ain't never coming back here again." He said, "You must be going to B&B. I said, "What? How do you figure that?" He said, "Well, because where you're going sure as hell ain't AA." And he wasn't kidding. I got drunk immediately. And for the next, that was sometime in 1970, 71. For the next few years, I was drunk. More drunk than not. And I went to AA drunk. I went to AA meeting sober and got drunk in the meeting. I come out of a blackout in AA meeting. That's scary. I would have left, but I didn't know who brought me. Tell you something, it never gets better, it always gets worse. I know what it's like standing in my kitchen. I look down the hallway, a 9-year-old girl standing at the end of the hallway. She's got her chin on her chest and her hair's in her face. She looks like a wounded animal. I'm standing down there on the other end of that room, bottle of vodka, early in the morning, sun coming up. I look down there at that little girl. She looks at me. I turn around and I take a drink. Now, I didn't have to have a drink because I was ashamed of what was going on. I had to have a drink because I needed a drink. And when I look back, she's be gone. She just wants to know which direction I'm going so she can go the other way. See? I know what it's like standing in my bathroom. I'm cooking that stuff up because I move right on to the next thing. Huh? I'm a pig, baby. Let me tell you. I move right on to the next thing. I don't hesitate. See? I don't hesitate. I used to drink a little beer and think maybe I ought to do something, smoke a little weed and fantasize how I was going to do it, shoot a little speed so I'd have the strength to do it, snort a little coke so I could be cool when I did it, and drink a little whiskey and forget what the hell it was I was going to do. You know? Move right on. And standing in a bathroom, looking in the mirror, I look in that mirror and a 9-year-old girl, 9.5-year-old girl looking through the hole in the door in that bathroom where I probably stuck my foot. And she's looking at me in that mirror. She didn't say, "Daddy, come play with me." She didn't say, "Daddy, don't beat me and mommy." She's just looking to see which direction I was going so she'd go the other way. And I'd turn around and I'd put that stuff in me and stand in front of that mirror. Now, not a sound come out of my body, but I'd be looking in that mirror. And what I'd be looking at, I'd be looking to see when it's going to happen. It's got to happen, don't you understand? Now it's got to happen. Now it better happen, or God help the people around me. And whatever happened, happened. Because it does. I had no idea what was wrong with me. I went and got baptized, sprinkled, dipped. I joined everything I could, took the pledge, the oath, and nothing happened, but I got worse. I know what it's like to crawl down lip-dragging drunk on the floor into my daughter's bedroom, pull her piggy bank out from underneath the bed and bust it and separating the pennies, nickels, and dimes, a quarter. Because, see, I'm one of them alcoholics ain't going to be taking no copper down to the liquor store or the connections house, baby. I'm going to be showing silver all the way. See? And I'm going to tell you, when I'm doing that, I got eyes in the back of my head. My daughter hiding in the closet. She didn't go to school that day because she had a busted lip or something. And being the very best father I could be, I'd give her a break. You imagine that? I'd give her a break. I'd let her shoot out behind me without inflicting any more pain in her life. Because you see, when you catch me in that pitiful, incomprehensible, demoralizing situation, bet your bippy I'm going to inflict some kind of pain on you that overshadows what you just saw me doing. Bet your bippy. And being the very best father I could be, I'd let her shoot out behind me and not inflict any more pain. And we live like that, not a day or a week. We live like that for a number of years. And they stayed in there because they didn't know they had a choice. I'll tell you about shame. I'll take you way past shame, Slick. I'll take you right on down the road. And I took my family down there without utter concern. And I went in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. In and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sure the best people in AA try to help me. I'm going to tell you something. When I'm on drink, I'm on a drink, and Lord help anybody that tries to get in my way. It says that in ABC. Now, what I did not know that I know today, see, what I did not know that I know today, Billy Smith talked about it last night. That's why I love Billy. I had a phenomena of craving. I had a phenomena of craving, and I am so grateful for that knowledge today. I'm going to tell you, I am so grateful for that knowledge today because I could not have forgiven myself for what I'd done. I could not have the forgiveness that I have today for me and you had I not known that I had no choice. That once I had that stuff in me, I could not stop. It was absolutely necessary for me to do it again and again and again. There was times. I believe I'm an alcoholic. I believe my kind of alcoholic is a drunk with a conscience. There's periods of time I would see frame of my life, and I didn't want to be that way. I didn't want to live that way. I didn't want to hurt the people I love. And I had to do it till I couldn't do it no more, because that's the way it is. And I had to run out of running room. You know what I mean? I had to run out of running room. And I went to AA, and I came back, and I went all the places I could go, and there wasn't no more. Finally, the guy did a 12-step on me, put me in a detox, and I detoxed. First time in my life, I detoxed. Nothing. I said, how about some hard candy and Valium? Huh? Come on, come on. Nothing. Eat a banana. And I'd eat a banana, and I'd sit in there, and they said, keep your mouth full of banana and shut up. And these old guys come and got me and took me to AA. And I started a road of recovery. My first day sober was May 11, 1976. And I'm going to tell you something. I'd been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd violated all the rules. So on May 11, 1976, I knew I not only could I not drink and use narcotics, I can't hit anybody either. Can't write no hot check. Can't cheat on my wife. And I can't debate God. It wasn't just don't drink and go to meeting. I knew there was some things because I'd been violating those things, and I kept getting drunk again and again and again. Those absolutes are just as absolute today, 32 years later, as they was then. And I started this road. I had a lot of damage. You know, people talk about coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, all the damage. I'll tell you what, the book says if you stop and stand still, waves of the past will roll over your ass. And you've been out there doing what I was doing. I had some waves rolling over me. I owed $250,000 to people. You can't write them a letter and say, I'll send you $100 a month. There was two different groups of people wanting to kill me. I bought a house for, I don't know, $19,000, owed $140 on it. I run out of, people say, said to me, I don't know what I'm going to do about my friends. I run out of friends and enemies at the same time, baby. They all abandoned me. And all I had left was her and the kid and me. And I started down this road. First thing I had to do is take care of my animals because I'm unfit to own an animal. I'm unfit to own an animal. That was my first demands. I'm unfit to own an animal. I'm too selfish. And I had to take care of that immediately. Had to clean up that house. Had to sober up that house. And my daughter went to Alateen. My wife went to Al-Anon. My dog went to Alley Dog. My cat went to Alley Cat. And they released my ass. And I'm going to tell you, it took me 14 years to pay that money back. And I didn't have an overwhelming good feeling about it. I went up to up in the panhandle to a banker that had a lot of money, and I went to him and I said, I owe a lot of money and I'm sober now. And he said, I know, I heard. And I said, I need some money. He threw a checkbook across. See, people will trust you. Normal people that have known you drunk will trust you if they can see some sobriety there. There's something about us, and they'll trust us. There's a certain, when you're desperate, there's a certain level of sincerity that's not there when you're lying. And this guy threw a checkbook over and said, start writing checks. And I did. I wrote $262,000 worth of checks, called him. I said, I'm done. He said, I'll set up a payment plan. If you miss one payment, I'll kill you. That's called a Panhandle of Texas contract. It took me 14 years to make that right. And Christmas time on the last payment, $19,000. I thought, man, it's going to be a lean Christmas. I'd send this money. And I remember talking to some people in AA. I called this banker up there. I said, you know, I've been on time every time. And I'd like to miss one. He said, go ahead and miss it, but I'm going to kill you. I wasn't kidding you. I paid it. I had to get a job. I had to do all these things I didn't know how to do. I'll tell you something. You know, a character defect isn't a character defect to me if it don't bother me. See? It may be driving you nuts, but if it don't bother me, ain't a character defect. And I'll tell you about making amends. I had to make amends for the way I was making amends. 10 years sober, the FBI come to my house. I'd been involved with organized crime for over 20 years. 10 years sober. I didn't bring it into AA. It was a lifestyle. You want to talk about a lifestyle? I had a lifestyle. that I brought to Alcoholics Anonymous with me, as well as a family. And I had to make amends to those people. And when I made amends to those people, they trusted me. And I didn't stop doing business with them. See, a character defect, if I come in here and I sober up, this is one of the reasons I look back and the reason I kept getting drunk. I'd have a character defect, I'd stop acting on it, then I'd stay sober, then I'd start acting on it, and I'd get drunk again. If you stop, stay stopped. But picking it up again is just like slipping for me. At 10 years sober, my world stopped. I sponsored, I don't know how many people, a whole damn meeting. Took them all out to ice cream. Carried 5,000 cash in my pocket and drove a Rolls Royce. 10 years sober, bam, the FBI came to my house. Woo! Did I suck some wind? I went from 260,000 a year to six, and that's a social shock, slick. And my family went with me. I took them with me, 10 years sober. Took them with me. FBI man said, I'm gonna make you drink, slick. That'll get you tough. See? I said, you don't want me to drink. He said, I'm gonna make you drink, and then nobody's safe. And I stood in front of a federal grand jury, 10 years sober. All the guys I sponsored fired me. Nobody wanted anything to do with me. Everybody in AA said, you've been running around here acting like a big shot. You're getting what's yours. I'm gonna tell you something I learned from that. That's why I love Bob Smith so much. There's people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Sit around and judge you. And when the crap comes down, they'll say, yep, 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 I knew it was coming. But I'm going to tell you, there's people in Alcoholics Anonymous that believe that 10 years sober is just as important as 10 days sober. And they come and scoop me up, and they said, come go with me. I've been there. And they saved my bacon. I never forget that, because there's people sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous with years of sobriety that are dying inside, and their ego won't let them say so. 10 years sober, I sit in participation meetings and puke my heart out. Newcomers would come and say, I love you, man. Come go with me. 10 years sober, I stood in front of a federal grand jury hearing. Old Don Pila come out of East Los Angeles. Don P told me, he said, let me tell you something. Don't you let them rob you of your dignity. That's all you got. Don't answer the questions that aren't asked. Because all your life, you've rationalized and justified your behavior at someone else's expense. Here you are sober. You don't answer the questions that aren't asked. And I stood in that courtroom that day, and I didn't answer the questions that weren't asked. I took God with me. God wants you to lie, it's okay. Called a whiteout. I don't know if it did, but I got out of there, I walked out of there, the FBI people walked me right in front of four guys they were trying to convict, and they took me in there first and wanted to treat me like a snitch, and I walked out of there and I looked every one of them guys in the eye, and I looked them in the eye, and they knew I didn't talk, and I walked right down that hallway, and everybody walked out of there. And today, 22 years later, those people in organized crime respect this guy for who I am, what I am, and the way I am. Who I am, where I am, and what I am. Because I didn't have to stoop to the coward that I was when I came here. The coward that I was when I came here. If anything Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me, it's given me spiritual muscles. I got spiritual muscles. See? I can stand out on that street and look them in the eye. I crawl before no one. And it ain't no macho things. You ladies got to quit using your body for your meal ticket too. Ain't no big deal. Same, same. Shame, shame. The most important thing I know about that situation was when my ego got deflated, my self-worth never went back to where it was when I was drunk. And I had something to play, and I got a job, and I worked. My daughter was there. Made amends to my daughter. Took 8 years before my daughter and I could sit next to each other and know that there wasn't nothing left unsaid. A healing process. A healing process. I remember how much time I got over a taper, huh? 10 minutes? I can't drag this story that long, but I'll tell two of them like Billy did. I wanted to be a big deal in AA, and I wanted to do this convention stuff, see? And I got to be the chairman of a convention like this. I got to be the head sick, as old David used to call him, the head sick. And Southern California Convention, 10,000 people went there. 1984, 10,000. But Sue was the Al-Anon chairman. My daughter was the Al-Teen chairman. I was the chairman of AA. And I did this thing. And doing it, you have to have these committee meetings. And you meet, and you get your committee, and you meet. And we were meeting in a little community building. I'd take a newcomer with me all the time, take my daughter. And after a meeting, if you're the chairman, you get to clean the room up. That's what you get to do when everybody goes home. I'd be sure the room clean, and I was cleaning around, and I saw this. Well, it was a man's purse. He's from Hollywood over on the west side. And I know a man's purse when I see one. They call them organizers, I guess, but it's a man's purse. And I seen it, and I reached right in there, and I got it, and everybody's gone, but this newcomer and my daughter unzipped it, and there's the credit cards and all this stuff, and money in there. I'm just frothing at the mouth, you know. And the newcomer's looking at me, my daughter's looking at me, whoa. And so I seen who it was. It belonged to a guy named Peter. Peter was on the entertainment committee. Didn't much like the guy, but he was on there, you know. And so I had this organizer, and I called him up. His phone's in there, and I called him up, and I said, Peter, I got your purse. So I'll bring it over to you. A Wednesday night, me and my daughter and the newcomer drove over on the west side. And I go up, and I got this thing, and I got the newcomer with me, and I got my daughter. They're watching me. And this guy comes up, too, a nice-looking young man. And I said, Peter, here's your purse. He said, Keith, if there's ever anything I can do for you, please let me know. Now, I remember thinking, dude, you can't even take care of your purse. Don't be putting nothing on me you can't deliver. But I didn't say nothing. I didn't say nothing. I didn't have to be a smart mouth. I didn't have to do it. I had a newcomer with me, and I'm my best when I got a newcomer. I got my daughter with her, and I'm trying to show her a good example. He took it, and he left. My daughter wanted to be a model, and she pursued that. There is no spot where God is not. And she looked beyond where other people feared to go. And come a time, she modeled all over the Orient. Come a time, she wanted to go to Italy, and she came home, worked, and stayed there a little while. Packed her bag. Wrote me a hot check. I gave her some cash. Took her down to the airport. She dragging these bags along. She's going to Milan, Italy. She can't speak Italian. She don't have an agent, nothing. And you know, Sue and I are going along with her. And she goes down, dragging this stuff, got some help, gets down there and waves bye. We didn't hear from her for 6 weeks. I didn't know if she's dead or alive. Didn't hear from her. About 7, 8 weeks, I got a phone call. It was Peter. Peter was a thespian. Know what you call it? An actor, model. There's a right name for it. I try to get it right, but I'm close. He's a good guy. But anyway, he was in Milan, Italy. And he was going to come home, and he decided to stay a week. Now, my daughter had gone over there, and my daughter got sick. And she holed up in an old room. And she didn't know what to do. She tried to find Al-Anon, and she couldn't find Al-Anon. And she couldn't speak the language, and she was completely lost and, you know, in God's hands. And she found a cop, and the cop helped her, and she got somebody from Alcoholics Anonymous. She was in Al-Anon then. She was 19. And somebody from Alcoholics Anonymous came over to this room and got her and took her to a meeting. In this meeting, there were 16 people. A closed meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this AA Italian man brought her to this meeting. And in that meeting, they go around and everybody shares. and it started on her left and went around. She was the last one that got to her. She said, I'm an Al-Anon. My name's Simone. I want to thank you for letting me come to the meeting. I know this is a closed meeting, and so I won't share. And because they weren't so narrow-minded and they were hungry, they said this, if you can talk program, we'll let you share. And sitting in that meeting was Peter. He hadn't gone home. For some reason, he stayed. And he come up to her afterwards and he said, your dad's name Keith, right? She said, yeah. He said, come go with me. Peter took my little girl. He gave her his tapes so she could learn Italian. He introduced her to people, introduced her to an agent, and stayed with her, got her a better place to live, and came home and called us and said, your baby's okay. Thank you very much. Now, I'm not so egotistical to stand here and think, because I did the next right thing, give Peter his purse, I saved my daughter's life. But I'm gonna tell you something. If I was 7 years sober at that time, if I was still the asshole that I had been when I came in here at 7 years sober, my daughter would never even have reached out to Alcoholics Anonymous because she would have figured you're gonna all be like that asshole. But because she saw me change, because she learned to forgive me, she reached out to you, and you were there. What a God story. What a God story. I'm gonna tell you something, that's well over 20 years ago. My daughter started conventions over there. My daughter started Al-Anon over there. She started Alateen over there. She translated all kinds of AA literature, because when the Italians translate English, they talk with their hands and they lose a lot. And so she was able to get all the meaning in there. She started all kinds of things. She was a pioneer over there. She has touched literally thousands of alcoholics' lives in over 20, 21, 22 years. Met a young Italian man. She got herself spiritually fit to be attracted to a healthy man. Ah. And they've been together over 20 years. And she looks at her mom and dad as her example. She has forgiven me. She looks at her mom and dad as her example. And she married a young man, very good young man, very good to my daughter, all I could ever want. I go over there every year and have an audience with the Bertolotto, and I say, thank you very much for loving my daughter as much as I love you. And they say, no problem. And I leave. And I got two little granddaughters. I'm gonna tell you something. There is some more yets. There are more yet. There's some more first. Don't come in here if you're new and think it's over. I didn't come here to turn it off. I came here to turn it on, baby. I come here to turn it on, and I do. And I've had some first. Knock your socks off. I go over there and I hold that little baby girl. I dance around, act like an old fool. I went over to the Italian beach with the tattoos on, and they call me the ugly American. And my little girl's so happy, they just walk along with me. And they just love me because they know not the way I treated their mama. They know not the way I treated grandma. They don't ever have to fear me. I'm 32 years sober. In my 69-year life, I used to be mean and tough. Now I'm just, by God, tough. Because I'm not mean anymore. See? I'm a gentle man. Something happened. I don't know what day it happened. I don't know when it happened, but it happened. I cared about somebody. I could look at a smile. I could shake a hand. I could stand up and be accounted for. You can call that spiritual. I choose to. I believe God did it for me. I believe he did for me what I couldn't do for myself. I wake up every morning next to that lady. I love her. And she always tells me, baby, I'm grateful for your sobriety. She's always grateful for my sobriety. Because we know where we came from. I do the things I do today in AA because, not that I'm afraid of going back where I come from. It's just so good where I'm at. I don't want to leave. God bless and thank you.